Francia. From the Ultra Chicks Volume 1, Fille et la Garage. You can find more of that on the Garage Punk 60s Girls Band Music Compilation, Ultra Chicks Volume 1, Fille et la Garage. It's 10:59 on KBOO Portland. And how are we able to bring you 24 hours of programming focusing on the particular travails and accomplishments and victories and sorrows and joys of women across the country and around the world? It's because of the support of our community. That's you, the listener, and many other members of our community who get involved to the extent and in the manner that makes sense for them. One such community member I'm pleased, honored, as well as contractually obligated to remind you about. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listeners, members, and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning, scholarships and other tuition opportunities available, course options and more information online at pugspdx.com. Now, I had promised you some digital divide, and here it is.
Welcome to the Digital Divide on this International Women's Day. I'm your host, Robbie Gaiman, and I am joined today by Elizabeth Fournier, our local mortician, funeral home operator, and undertaker, and affectionately we call her the Green Reaper. Welcome to the Digital Divide, Elizabeth.
I love it. Thank you. And I love being at KBOO because, did you know, I was here back in the 80s.
Well, I do know that. I do know that about you. And also, we discussed this very topic back in 2010, 8 years ago. I think at the advent of the green funeral movement, I think 6 Feet Under had just kind of opened up that topic in an episode. And I think it really stuck in people's brains that there were options. And we had you on the show and we talked about it then. And so much has happened, I know, in your life and all of our lives, of course, in these last, 9 years? That's 9 years ago. So in that time, you've written two books, The Green Reaper, not a biography, and the Green Burial Guidebook most recently, which is the most amazing handbook for green burial. It has everything you could possibly need to know, including how to build your own casket and how to wrap a body like a burrito in a shroud with diagrams. I mean, it's detailed. It's an actual guidebook, and that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. And anything else that, you know, pops in to your mind that you want to bring up. So welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I give it all away. I figure this is something that we all can do. Let's have the knowledge. Let's talk about it. And let's put it all in word perfect font where you can take a peek and use it for yourself.
Well, not only can we talk about it, it's going to happen.
And it is happening and we do it.
That's right. We all do it. That's like talk about a level playing field. You know, the one thing, regardless of your economics, color, beliefs, is we're all going to die. I believe there's a 100% track record for that.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't
far.
Matter what goes on with medicines or science. It's
that's right.
100% mortality rate is there, unfortunately.
So far. Some people, I think, are, you know, would like to think that someday that, and maybe it won't, maybe someday that, you know, that we'll invent something that, but so far, the way it is. So we're going to talk about the Green Burial Guidebook with Elizabeth. And I want to talk about the book, but to our listeners who haven't met you, aside from having been a KABU volunteer, what drew you to this work? What was it? Because it's definitely not like I think you have to have like almost like a nurse or a teacher in the way you. There's a calling because to deal, a lot of people are very superstitious about death. They think if you get close to it, you might catch it, which is, you know, amusing. But I think I've even been guilty of that in my past. So tell us what drew you to this work of working with the dead.
I was just that really unfortunate girl really early who had many people in my family home pass away. So it just became obvious that I was doing something others weren't doing. I was going to rosaries and going to funerals and spending time in cemeteries and wearing black dresses. And this was definitely, you know, I found out that my role was a little bit different than other people. The Fournier family was spending more time in caskets versus walking around the planet. So I think what happens after that is people start coming up to you, little kids, when they have somebody in their life who's transitioning or maybe has left, and they know you as maybe someone who has something that can talk to them about, or maybe they can just sit next to you at the lunch tray because there's a chance that you can relate. You understand their pain and anguish and the strangeness of the cycle of what they're going through. So that's my really early, early foray.
So you were exposed to death growing up. It was more than one person in your life, and so did that normalize it? Did that make it natural, or did you get into this work to kind of dive in and come out the other side and kind of saturate yourself in it to be of service?
I wish I was that brilliant to actually put all those pieces together to think about. I just think at a young kid, I looked standard, as other kids did in the 70s at my little school. So it wasn't a matter of I stood out by any other means, but because of the strange thing that happened in my house. So I, you know, when I went to college, I actually went to get a nice normal degree. I was studying communications at Linfield, and I did my apprenticeship here in the 80s, which was great. And I was headed in that direction, even though I knew the other direction was where I wanted. So the next year, I was off doing my apprenticeship living in the cemetery. So hand in hand there. But that was definitely where I was going. And out of school, that's what I pursued. And that's what I've been doing all along. And like you said, that deep dive into healing and helping others and trying to figure out my own path, sure, it's all been part of it. But I definitely didn't have the foresight ahead of time to figure all of that out as I went along.
No, right. In retrospect, we see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Not when we're in it so much. What is the difference between, like, what's the distinction between a traditional burial and a green burial? Like, where's the distinction between those two?
Well, if you look at TV or the movies or something which you've seen, not everybody has been to a funeral or a cemetery or been to a burial in their lives. And I'm always just amazed. I mean, how fortunate for you that death has never touched close to you and this isn't something you've ever been a part of. But on the other hand, people sometimes don't know what this looks like. So something standard would be probably a metal casket, something lacquered, wood, something which has been processed and there's some, you know, toxins, things that are there. We go ahead and we put that into a cemetery, and the cemetery is going to have a grave space which has a liner of a concrete liner or maybe a stainless steel vault. And from there, we're going to have a body which most likely has been embalmed, so there's chemicals. And we're going to have a big headstone, something fabricated. We're going to have grass that sparkles because of all of the pesticides. And that's what your traditional American burial has looked like. And that's what we moved along with over time. So when you do something more natural or a green burial, what you're looking at doing is removing some of those barriers to go back to the earth. We're not having the embalming. We're not having the steel casket. We're not having the concrete liner in the grave. We're basically taking your loved one and letting them be back into the earth. However, that takes on several shades of green, and that can be everything from doing this in your yard or even doing this in more of a standard cemetery, but it's how we go about it and the natural alternate container we use, which again can look standard or can look like something that is the sheet off your bed. So yeah, definitely lots to unpack and lots to talk about, but I just love the fact that this is something we can talk about. I remember back even in 2006, you came to me with a tiny little recorder and you were asking me about green burial. And back then, you know, I had buried some people in their yards, but I was so nervous to talk about it because I thought, well, this isn't what other funeral homes are doing. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, there. I remember that was this terrible interview I gave you because I thought that there's so much of this I just felt so nervous about airing. So now it's funny to see it with the interview we had years back, and now 13 years later, this is something that we can just be so a part of. Mm-hmm. There's books written on it. It's on TV. People do this.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Right.
Good endorsement.
I mean, this whole elaborate, you know, burial and embalming thing, it's kind of newish. I mean, I think even, well, in the book, you kind of do go back into the history of it. And one of the things that was so fascinating to me, because I've always thought that, you know, the formaldehyde embalming process is so creepy, like it actually makes death more creepy, you know, if you think death is creepy, that like exponentially increases it to me. And and it used to be that, you know, someone died, you might like put them on a block of ice or just throw them up on the table until, you know, the undertaker could, you know, come and get the body, and everybody could kind of, they were there with the body in the house, it stayed in the house. And they just dealt with it until they had the funeral and the burial. And then you mention in that in the Civil War is when embalming became a practice, because that was a way that they could preserve the body to send it back home to wherever that was. Tell us a little bit about that transition, that history where we pivoted from just, you know, death being a natural fact of life that occurred in your home, so people were not, you know, separated from it. It was right there. So it was a normal part of life, as dying is part of life, or we could say that life is part of dying. Either way, it works both ways.
Goes hand in hand.
So tell us how we pivoted from natural to this, you know, concrete lined caskets where everybody's embalmed, and it's a completely unnatural experience.
I love talking about it, and ironically, it fits in perfect with International Women's Day, because women were the layers of the dead. We were the ones who took care of loved ones in the house. We would bathe them, dress them, put them in the front room. Did you know, actually, those old Victorian houses where there's that grand parlor out front, that was made specifically for funerals. That was made for the visitation. We had home funerals. That's what it was. We didn't have the funeral parlor. We had the front parlor, and we would lay somebody out in a natural wood-made casket from the guy down the street or the artisan or Uncle Bob, where we would have somebody on a table. We actually, when you said we would throw them up on a table, the mortician in me wants to say, no, we place them gently on the viewing board.
I meant that.
I know you meant that. You gentle flower, you. So we would go ahead and do those things, invite the townsfolk in, make the food, do all this. And from there, we'd open up the side door that would be large enough to take the person out, bring them down the street in the cart, or bring them to the backyard and have some words of grace and lay some earth on them, break some bread, and have some memories. So women did all this. What happened was, of course, the Civil War, which is a really, really, really big deal in time, because all these boys now were off in different states or different areas, and we wanted to bring them home and lay them to rest in our churchyard or in our backyard. So we had to use the embalming. We had to have doctors that came up with this fantastic preservation idea, and they used this elixir of soap and water and mercury, and it preserved bodies enough to get them where they had to go.
Who figured that out?
A doctor did, and guess what? When you're a doctor, you realize, aha, this is a money-making principle. So now we can actually have students. We can have mortuary school, and that's where we had the boys that went. But even the embalming fluids, so many things happened. There was hundreds of thousands of these boys that when they were cutting into these arsenic-laden bodies were getting very, very sick. So they actually repurposed the embalming fluids. So we went from this arsenic and mercury to formaldehyde. So essentially we're swapping one set of hazardous problems for another. So from there, the funeral industry was born, right? We had these guys. They said, hey, let's take the body out of the parlor and bring it into the funeral home. You call me when someone passes away.
Right.
From there, it's merchandise. We can sell you caskets. We can have a fancy car. We can provide, you know, the doves for release, whatever you need to do. And then the cemetery industry got in the game, and they said, hey, we're going to make these burial spaces sexy. We're going to have this green grass, and as sexy as a cemetery can be. And we're going to make it this place you want to rollerblade, and you want to picnic, and you want to hang out on a Sunday when you come visit Grandma. You're going to say, gee, this place is swell, and I really want to buy the space next to Grandma.
You really kind of injected class into it, so that, you know, depending on your economics,
that became classy
structure, then you could have like the fancier thing or the less fancy thing.
Yes, because your loved one deserved it. They tried to make sales pitches such as, well, gosh, you get married once, so your wedding dress, it's your rite of passage. That's why it's so expensive.
Right.
That casket, let's get the Cadillac version, because, boy, you need to show your kinfolk that
that's right.
Uncle Billy Bob, he was fantastic, and the premium model was what he needed. And they had fantastic names that are always fun to think about.
Can you share one fantastic name?
Oh, well, the Cadillac.
That the was Cadillac. The,
I mean, yeah, come on. It's top drawer, baby.
Top drawer, baby. Right. So slowly, it changed from, it a lot like childbirth, like you had mentioned, from a natural process that happened at home.
With women,
you know, skilled, experienced women, into kind of a male-dominated, hands-off, sanitized version of, you know, we'll deal with it, we're the professionals.
Yeah, leave it
it's
to
like,
us.
But it yeah. still died. I didn't, you know, we don't need their help to die, but suddenly, you know, we can't bury ourselves, we need to use, and then laws were developed that prevented you from really being
to
able
support
to do
the
it
funeral
yourself,
industry.
To support it. Fascinating. Fascinating. So what should people consider when, after reading the book, it's crystal clear that the best time to plan your own funeral is when you are alive, because asking people who are grieving, who are maybe being bombarded with, you know, other family members that are grieving, really hard to make decisions and to know what to do, and you're most vulnerable. So how can people plan their funeral, their burial in advance? What can they do? What are the steps that people can take?
This is the stuff that I really like to share, because these are the things that make people's lives easier. And ultimately, doesn't that make the world go around so much smoother to know that we can do these things? First off, make the decision. Do you want to be cremated or buried or donated to science or have a burial at sea? Now in Oregon, we have water cremation, which hopefully we'll be chatting about here after we roll
this.
She's all in.
I'm all for the burial at sea. I've pretty much decided that That's like the level of theatrics that really works for me. Burial at sea.
You don't have to be a Kennedy or in the military.
You can love it.
No problem there. So there's all these fantastic choices that you can use as a method of disposition here in Oregon. People are not necessarily aware of. So get that in order. What do you want? And talk to people about it. And then figure out who is your next of kin.
Who are the people that they should talk to? Because if I wanted to start arranging my burial at sea, you would be the person I would talk to, because I don't have any starting point for something like that.
Okay.
So a funeral director, a mortician, that would be who you would start with.
Start with your family. Start with your loved ones. And if you feel like you don't have the traditional family structure of the registered domestic partner or the spouse, then we go to adult child, because that would be your next of kin. If that's not in play, do you have a living parent who is still mentally sound? Then we go to brother, sister. If none of those variables work for you, do you want to have a cousin or a niece involved making your choices for disposition? Because somebody has to sign paperwork for you. It's just sort of what we do. Someone's name needs to be on the death certificate. So this is sort of the boring parts of it. But it's real that there's an element of legal responsibility.
No, it's good to know that, you know, even if you're planning it, it's good to know that, you won't be there to sign your own paperwork. You have to assign someone that task and talk it over with them. And so you have your plan B person who's going to kind of handle the documents and they'll know what to expect, because you'll discuss it with them.
Yeah, not only do they have to know that, all right, she wants to go out from Newport, Oregon, and this is what she's hoping to wear, and there's all those variables of the disposition, what to do with you, but boy, a lot of the trickier stuff is, how do we close down your life? Mm-hmm. Where is your deed held? Where is your bank? Somebody has to be in charge of these things. You can choose a friend, but you need to have some paperwork. So I can't say enough, peoples of the airwaves, have a durable power of attorney paperwork written out.
Now, what is a durable power of attorney? Some people might think they know what that is, but they might not be accurate.
Totally. So people say to me all the time, oh, I'm the power of attorney for my brother. That's fantastic. That means you are the person who has the right to choose how to spend the money. You can make choices of what happens when they pass away. However, if your brother passes away, power of attorney is no longer legal. Right. So what you need is a durable. So you go in, there's a form you can get from the internet and go to the bank and notarize it. You can go to a lawyer if you want to spend the money. There's ways we can do this. And there's two parts of that. There's that durable power of attorney for health care, meaning you can make all those choices in the hospital, levels of care, all of that. And then there's the financial part. That's the person with money. And that's the person who also chooses some ideas of your living structure. So this goes off the green burial topic. However, it's all hand in hand, because that's what people always find out. They'll come in and say, oh, yeah, mom says she has a plot, and we just need to pick out a casket, and then we're done. And I have to say, gosh, there's
if only it were that simple.
Yeah, it's not even a matter of what words shall we use eloquently to describe her with the obituary. It's more the after effects of how are we going to, are you the legal person to choose these things? And then how do we disperse everything else?
Right. And then if other, you know, my own experience with people dying is that in much the same way that weddings do, often brings out the worst in people. Because people are emotional and they're worried about doing the wrong thing, and they're worried about their own interests, or they're worried about the deceased person's interest and somehow protecting that, and then the families get involved and people get weird. So having all of that laid out in advance just seems so logical, but it's I think it's one of the things people procrastinate about doing the most, because again, I think there's this subconscious or even semi-conscious thought that, well, if I deal with my death, it might make it happen.
Yeah, Chinese families do not prearrange. They don't buy the cemetery property or come in a lot. And I can't speak, of course, for everybody with that background, but when I was working at cemeteries where we had a lot of Asian families of the different cultures come in, specifically Chinese would not, because they felt like you were preordaining this to happen. And I think a lot of people say, oh, I'll just let my kids deal with it. But that's such a non-nice gift because they think, well, I'm letting them off the hook. I'm not going to have this recommendation of I need this or I'm going here. You choose what you want and gosh, I won't be alive. I'll be fine with what you choose.
That's right. I wouldn't have to deal with all the arguing.
But you're not also giving them the best gift because then they need to do all the other things. And people also, did you know that there's people who never even talk about this? So I'll get people who come in, even a married couple, been together 40 years, husband will die, the wife will sit there and say, well, what should I do? What's the right thing to do? We never talked about this. What do people normally do? And there is no right or wrong. This is all what works for you ethically, spiritually, morally, whatever you need. But that's a tough one. You're stuck not knowing if you did the right thing.
It is a tough one. We're going to have a little break in the middle here, but before we go to break, dying at home or hospice, what is the difference? And what is the difference? I mean, I know that hospice is you go to a hospice facility, but economically, what are just the differences between being at home and being in hospice?
So this might go over your break time, so just signal me and I'll just get up and do my dance during your musical interlude because I got to stretch it out. But so hospice is a federally funded program, and that's something that you can allow your loved one to be a part of if they have a diagnosis of 6 months or less to live. Hospice are registered nurses. These are people who come in and care for you. This is why you don't need to bring mom or dad in the car and bring them to the doctor when they're horribly ill. You have a doctor or a nurse that does home visits. Someone delivers medication. This is all about the comfort of you as you leave the planet, as well as the comfort and the help for those in your life. So there are some facilities, but there's also places that hospice will come to you at your home. So you can die at home under hospice care or not, but if you're not under hospice care, that's where the medical examiner gets involved.
So does federally funded mean that there is no cost for hospice care?
It's free. So I encourage people to do it. It's free.
And you can have it at home or in a facility.
Yes, and hospice nurses, these are angels on earth. They come into your house. They can be there 24 hours a day. There's also death doulas. Have you heard of this? The end of life.
Well, I read about it in the book.
Death doulas. Okay, I would love to talk about that as well, because just like we have the birth midwife, we have the death midwife. And again, this is another whole group of people who can love you and be there for you and walk you through everything.
I want all those people. Well, let's have a little musical break. We're going to hear from our good friend Willie Nelson.
Oh, perfect.
I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. Prison bars have flown. I'll fly away. I'll fly away. Oh, glory. I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. And then I'll fly away to a land where joy shall never end. I'll fly away. I'll fly away in the morning when I die.
We are back. You are listening to The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. I'm Rabia Yeaman, your host, here with Elizabeth Fournier, mortician, funeral director, Green Reaper of Cornerstone. Is it Cornerstone Mortuary? Is
Cornerstone it? Funeral Boring, Oregon.
Cornerstone Funeral in Boring, Oregon.
That makes me the Undertaker of Boring, Oregon.
Yeah, well,
never gets old.
We're gonna get you a sash. You get fun. A sash for that.
Fun.
And it's just gonna say Undertaker, Boring, Oregon.
Boring Undertaker. How's that?
I think you are anything but boring. Let's see. I've got like so many questions here. People can go kind of temporarily crazy. We were talking about making plans. And I already learned something today that to do a durable power of attorney, all you need to do is download the form and take it to a notary. You don't need an attorney for that.
Save your money and also save your headache when the time comes. This allows you to get into people's houses. This allows you to have access to bank accounts. It allows you the help you're going to need, because not only are you grieving and sad that you lost someone you cared about, but then come all the hiccups with paperwork and mean people on the phone who say, I can't talk to you. So right. Make it easier on yourself.
And a notarized durable power of attorney gives the family member all of that access.
Well, it also, it depends. Now, let's say Uncle John, I keep using uncles here, but I guess they're one level distant and they're a little bit older than us, so it's ultimately not so sad, right? If we have this person who has a bank account with somebody else, then no, the person with the durable power attorney can't get into the bank account because
there's someone else.
Yeah,
right.
There's somebody else involved with someone else's money. So there's, the house, the deed, is it just uncle's name? Is it other people? Is it the person prior who never turned it over? That's something else too when it comes to deeds of houses, deeds of cars, deeds of cemetery plots. If these can all be in the rightfully owned person's name, that way the new person who comes along doesn't have to go through all the minutiae of getting old certified copies of death certificates of other people and proving their death. So let's just make it easier for your loved one, because they are grieving you, but they also don't need to. Oh, I don't want to say resent you, because that's probably not completely accurate, but you just don't make it harder on them.
Right. It's already a hard time.
Yeah.
And it's just a hard time when people have loss, and there's just a lot of emotions that bubble up to the surface. So having to do this kind of like intense secretarial work of finding records and talking to people while you're, who knows how you're feeling, and other people around you are also having feelings too. So,
and if you're in this situation, take it easy on yourself. Drink your water, get your sleep, get up and hula hoop or do whatever makes you happy, because you can just do one step at a time. Paperwork is going to be there. It's just like the laundry. If you don't feel like folding the socks, they'll be there a couple hours down the road. It's all going to be okay. And then you can also ask for help too, because it is very overwhelming.
Yes. And it's not always planned. Sometimes people are sick and they're going to die, at some point in the future, not that distant future. And then suddenly, sometimes death comes suddenly and unexpectedly through accident or heart attack or things like that. And being prepared is going to, I think, just really save people so much extra grief that is unnecessary if you just do these, and in your book, you go through everything that you could possibly need. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And actually, just to wrap this up really quick, there's something else that I've seen that I want to help people not do. If you decide that you want to be cremated and you want your ashes scattered from Mount Etna, or you want your loved one to go on a gondola in Venice, or go to Disneyland and do this at the Haunted Mansion, keep in mind, not only you might be breaking rules, but you're putting a lot on a family. I have people who call me who say, I still have mom's ashes because my husband and I can't afford to go to Hawaii, and mom really wanted to be at the rim of the volcano or on a certain hike, or we can't afford that. So think about that. If you're coming up with this beautiful extraordinary plan, right. maybe put some funds aside for those people to pay for carry that vacation. Out those wishes.
That's right. That good idea. That makes a lot of sense. Right. You're asking people to basically go to Hawaii for you and leave you there. Green burial. Let's get back to that.
Love it.
And you had mentioned, you know, that you can be buried on your own property. You can be buried in a cemetery that not all cemeteries have green access. Is that right?
Right. And just like you can't be buried on all property. So
that's right.
Would love to kind of break this out for everybody so there's a good understanding.
Well, right. One of the things that was insightful in the book that made so much sense is, you know, well, first of all, most burials at home are typically in rural areas. I mean, probably not always, but typically. However, there was one sentence in that chapter that really stuck out to me, and it said, how would you feel if in the future, after you're buried, your family no longer owned that property and they couldn't go back to see you because somebody else owned it? So, you know, that's a kind of like that forward thinking that you, when you're in it and you're like, oh, let's bury, you know, mom or dad or grandma on, you know, the south lot, and it'll always be here, and, you know, she grew up here and that's what she would want. But in today's reality, we might not always own that property, or maybe your children and grandchildren won't, and so then somebody else will have grandma on their property, and that could also be complicate selling your land in the future if somebody's like, oh yeah, I don't think I really, you know, to buy your personal cemetery. So tell us a little bit about that.
So as much as I sleep, eat, drink, and luxuriate in the idea of green burial, I also want to give people the responsibility pieces, because that's so important. Like you're saying, oh, it's so romantic, and there's this lilac bush in the backyard, and she would love to be there. So things to think about. First off, in the state of Oregon, where we are, how the law reads is it's per county. Multnomah County says, heck no. So even if you're a volunteer at KBOO for years, you're not going to be planting yourself in the parking lot across the street. We just don't do that, right? So Multnomah
County
says,
they won't let us park our cars across the street.
So come on. What are you asking for here? So, right. So you, no, that's not going to work. So I happen to be in Clackamas County. Luckily for me, my parlor is a repurposed goat barn in rural Clackamas County, and the law reads in the state of Oregon for Clackamas County, rural Clackamas County allows burial on a yard. Now that's burial, natural burial or traditional, meaning you can be preserved with embalming fluid in your stainless steel box with your huge upright headstone in your yard, and that's fine. What I specialize more in is the natural, because so many reasons. One, economically sound. The other, environmentally sound. Right. So let's say you're going to do this in your yard. What I tell people first is, if they're happening to either just be calling me on the phone, emailing me, or using me for their services, whatever they want, I give free advice. I'm here. So that's no problem. People will call and say, okay, we're going to do a green burial. We know in the state of Oregon, we do not need to hire a funeral home. We're going to do this all ourselves. Then I say, fantastic. Let me sort of hold your hand and walk you through this, because there's things you need to know.
And in your book, you have the instructions, detailed step-by-step instructions on how to dig a grave.
Yeah. I mean, why hire a funeral home? Why hire a backhoe operator if you can do all these things yourself? I mean, wouldn't that be beautiful in a perfect world? Someone passes away at home, which legally you can do. You keep someone at home, which legally you can do. You have family, friends, your own team, your own tribe come in. Again, legal. Prepare a hole or a space in the yard. Bring them out there. Prepare the space. Close the space. Kumbaya, we eat out of the garden. I mean, that sounds pretty darn environmentally friendly and pretty cost effective.
And the level of detail is, Elizabeth advises you actually bring a little ladder that you can put in the grave so you can step out of the grave when you're done digging it.
Why would you think about that? You dig and dig and dig and dig, and the sun goes down and you think, oy vey, I'm you know, down here. The good thing with natural burial is we really don't go 6 feet down or 8 feet down. We really want to go about 3 feet down because that's the permaculture. That's where we have the fungi and the spores and all the activity, and that's where the party really gets started.
Oh, my God, when you said spores, you reminded me of in the book when you're talking about shrouds that somebody has invented a death suit that is made of mushroom spores.
Yes, she's brilliant. She did a TED Talk, by the way. Jay Rim Lee. She's fantastic. She is from the Boston area, and she came out with this great idea of why not have this material, which is fully biodegradable and have spores and fungi involved in it, and that will help move the biodegradable process along, composting yourself, right? So there's been some studies done, and it's shown that, well, you know, it doesn't necessarily move everything faster, but it's still out there. It's still an idea. I personally have never seen one. I have never sold one. I have never had a... I've had families say, oh, this sounds so cool. But the reality is people know you can be placed naturally in a space with earth and
right, it's
going to
happen anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's... Yeah, look at her TED Talk, though. It's cool. Like she wears it during the talk.
It's kind of like a boutique death item.
Sure. Like yeah, we have these trees. People say to me, well, what about those big pods I see on Facebook? And you can bury the pod. You can put yourself in the pod, you can bury yourself. And I have to say, that's sort of an art installation that's in Italy. It's not a form of disposition. We don't have those for sale on the open market. It's just sort of there. So I want to touch back on the legality piece of the burying people in the yards, because this is an important thing, too. So when somebody wants to do this, I say, let's take your address. Let's run it past the zoning and planning department with the county. Whatever county you're in, but I happen to be in Clackamas, and I technically helped most people I bury are in Clackamas County, but there's other counties, Jefferson County. There are several in the state of Oregon that actually allow you to do this, which is pretty neat to find out about, because this is not what funeral homes talk about, and you don't get to learn it necessarily. So we can go ahead and make that something you can do. Now, you don't have to go get a special deed. You don't have to go pay money for... this people think, well, I have to go to the county and I have to have somebody come out and I have to have this deed and I have to do all this stuff. You don't. You merely just have on the death certificate private land, and then you have the address and we can bury you. So we'll go into some of the specifics a bit here.
We apparently have a phone call.
Wonderful.
We'd like to take it. We'll take a call.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda. Elizabeth, this is Linda Olsen-Osterlin, and you facilitated Will Musto's cremation and all of that for us just about a year ago now,
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, and I heard your voice, and I heard you know, you guys talking, Robbie, and you talking, and I just wanted to say what a huge difference it made to have you, just to have somebody who's calm and easy and will tell you the details and will be completely helpful through it. It was just really made a huge difference to have you be the person. So I just wanted to say that on air and in public, and thank you. And I've been thinking about Will a lot, and you made that whole process so much easier.
Well, thank you for your call, Linda.
I'm hugging you through the microphone. Thank you so much.
All right, let's talk about natural burial again.
Yeah, and that, well, how lovely. You know, and that's really what this job is all about, is that down the road, someone says, thank you, you made that easier rather than harder.
Yeah.
So what a blessing. I really appreciate that phone call. If you want to do this on your own property, you need to have at least 1 acre.
Okay.
You need to choose on the property where the burial will be. I think sometimes people say, well, I have 20 acres, so I'll go way, way back where the blackberry bushes are, way in the corner. But what you're not thinking about is right across that fence is the neighbor, and you are pretty close to their home. So we want to, again...
Or is there water? Does water affect where you can...
Watershed, yes. Right. Electricity. Public road. There is, again, this is all listed in the book of what you need, and you also can find this knowledge for free, Clackamas County. Just because they have people who do a lot of burials, this information is there. Call me at the parlor, what have you. But there are some rules that we want to follow. So once you decide, yes, this is something for me, it's what I want to do, are you going to dig the space with a backhoe you own? Are you going to have somebody come with their little tractor or a Kubota? Are you going to do this by hand? And if you've never dug a grave by hand, it's a huge undertaking. Pun. Undertaking.
Oh, right.
Wake up. So it's a really big deal. And also, are you dealing with sand? Are we dealing with rock? Are we dealing with what does a tundra look like? A really big deal. Two people digging a grave. Okay, that's why I have all the specifics in the book. I talk about the type of shovels you should use because, my goodness sakes, it's a big deal. So once you prepare the space, have your loved one in it. What we need to think about as far as legalities, if you are going to sell your home, no longer have it in the family, then you freely allow your loved one to be part of the earth. They can be a tree, what have you, and you just know that they've gone back to nature.
And you absolutely legally must disclose when you sell your property that this is part of.
Yeah, and you know, this is Portland, baby. I think that half the people will say, yikes, I saw a poltergeist as a child, and no bueno. The other half will say, oh, that's really neat. And I know personally, if I was looking at land and there was somebody who was buried there, I would want to find out their birthday and their favorite color, and I'd visit them and, you know, sing to them out the window, and I'd embrace it. So I know not everybody is as wacky as that, but there are many who really think, well, this is really neat to have somebody's back to nature, and they're not going to disturb me, and they're going about their business because they're really not there anymore. They're really going to be just some basic bones in the yard.
Right.
If we're not embalmed and we're not doing the metal casket and we're not entombing them in concrete, yada, yada, and yada.
Can a cemetery force you to use an expensive casket, or can you choose to use, you know, a pine box or a shroud at any cemetery, or can the cemetery dictate what you have to use?
All right, so great question, because every cemetery has the right to make their own rules regardless of where they are, and doesn't matter what the cemetery down the street's doing. So the cemetery can say to you, you need to have a rigid container.
Okay.
Which would mean you can have a simple pine box you made, or you can buy something on the internet, or you can have a stainless steel casket. Rigid container means when you lower something into the ground, it's actually firm.
Right.
Some cemeteries would say, well, okay, we'll allow a cardboard box. Mm-hmm. We'll even allow a shroud, a sheet off your bed. Again, it depends on what their lowering apparatus is and what their plans are. Now, as far as a natural burial, there is plenty of cemeteries in Oregon and in Washington who say, fantastic. And what constitutes a natural burial in a cemetery is merely a cemetery that's saying you do not have to have a grave liner. What a grave liner is would be a concrete box, or if you want to spend money on a stainless steel liner, this is merely something so when the soil is backfilled into the grave space, this holds that soil in place.
It doesn't compact in and leave a dip.
Right. And there's no, and the reason why is for several things. When they have heavy equipment roll over, when soil settles, they really want to, again, not have that wavy gravy look. They want to have the sexy cemetery where it's green and sparkling and lush and flat. And not
park only will, like yeah, a park.
Right. Nobody will, you know, trip and try to sue them, but also somebody will look out at the vast veranda and say, this is lovely. This is where I want, because that might be their goal. Other cemeteries say, hey, come on out. You're not going to have a standard headstone. We're going to go ahead and lay you to rest. We're going to have, you can use anything indigenous to the area, wildflowers. We're going to put the ivy and the soil back, even in the layers. The soil goes back. It doesn't just come back and to fill the space. The soil sometimes goes into layers. So all the permaculture is exactly where it was with the natural grasses, whatever, on top. And so you can have graves that way too.
Tell us about cremation. I think a lot of people think about cremation as being the most economical option. What is the most economical option for disposing or taking care of the dead body?
The most economical is if you have the ability to have your loved one
burial at sea, right?
It's actually in your own yard. If somebody can pass at home, and you don't get a funeral home involved, and you do everything yourself, that would be the least expensive. Cremation is pretty inexpensive. Now, any funeral home can choose what their cost structure is. However, in Oregon, Washington, we're almost up to 80% of residents choose cremation. Mm-hmm. And that really happened a lot with the baby boomers, people born between 46 and 64, who came along and said, hey, we don't want to buy that 3,200 square foot space in the ground, and we don't want to have a casket, and I don't belong to a religion, so I don't want to have a service, and all of those sort of things that go into it. Why don't I be cremated, and I either can be scattered scattered at my favorite viewpoint, hiking space. Someone can leave me on their shelf. What we found out over time with cremation is there's a lot of not great things that go into it, such as the fuel from the machines to start this up. We have to have a cremation at 1,800 degrees. So if you only think about the fuel, the resources, the fossil fuels that go into that. Also,
mercury filling.
Yes, that's another part. Somebody inside the actual cremation machine, what's going out into the environment. They say it's almost like rather than putting the body into the ground, the body itself goes out and floats into the universe. The mercury fillings, if there's any sort of metals, if there's any sort of, let's say you're in a casket, you had a visitation and then you're going to be cremated in the casket, the lacquers, the toxins, all of those toxic particles, they float into the universe.
Oh, they cremate the casket as well.
Some families want that.
Okay.
A lot of times you need to be at least in a rigid container, at least in some sort of a wood or some, you know, some most crematories are fine with cardboard box. It just depends. Again, everybody has their own rules, but that does go out into the universe. So what we have that's super cool here in Oregon is the Aqua Cremation. There's a machine in Portland, and that's something that we can do. Not all states have this. We're at about 16 states right now.
What is that? What is I've never heard of aqua cremation.
Yes, that's new for a lot of people. Now, it's more expensive than the standard cremation. Just because the standard cremation has been around, you can do this at most places. This is something that everybody seems to have a machine somewhere locally in town. That's high heat, and that's with flame. Aqua is water, and it's low heat, and it's basically the body having a nice little gentle bath.
Oh, I like that.
The tissues sort of break down, and then we have the skeletal form, and then we do the same thing with cremains. We give a box of ashes back to somebody, and that's your end product, which is the same as your standard cremation. It's just a different process. You're not putting any of that out into the atmosphere.
Should we take one more call?
I love callers, yes.
Okay. Ken.
Hello. I have a question for Elizabeth.
What you got?
I'm regarding the Willamette National Cemetery, which is, I think, federal land, and how are they in relation to green burial? Many of the folks who are leaving us now are, you know, the baby boomer and military folks. And so I was, love your book, Elizabeth, and thank you. But could you comment on what the National Cemetery up there on Mount Scott requires?
Well, Ken, thank you for calling in. And I'm so thrilled you asked this question because that's something that people aren't aware of. But what Willamette National has said is they want to honor families who want to allow their loved one to be back to the earth. So what they do is they do want that concrete liner inside grave spaces, but they will turn that upside down. So what that means is rather than having sort of a box that the casket will go in, they'll allow the loved one to be touching the earth, and then they have that three-sided concrete box they'll place down, then the soil will go on it. So it's sort of like what they do in Jewish cemeteries as well. Most Jewish cemeteries have the concrete liner. However, they allow you to go back to the earth and be natural, and you can be in a shroud, you can be in a natural container. Banana leaf container, you can be in something made out of wicker. So if you want to start getting thatching something out of some materials in the backyard, I'd say start now because we're talking about pre-planning and pre-preparing.
Thanks, okay. Ken. Thanks for your call, Ken.
Again, thank you so much and love your book.
Okay, bye. Ken, thank you. Bye-bye.
And the book that we're talking about is the Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial, by our guest today, Elizabeth Fournier. And did we have one other caller? I'm not sure. I see my engineer talking on the phone there. Nope. Okay.
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely. So, Cornerstone Funeral Services. I'm in Boring, Oregon. Phone number is 503-637-5020. And I am happy to answer questions about anything. People want to even find out about, how do I make a casket and how do I have a green burial? But people ask things like, well, what does Social Security pay? And if my loved one is a veteran, what benefits do I get? And it's a whole, you know, scope of things, a whole Santa sack of stuff people don't deal with unless someone passes away.
You're a a cremation vessel of information. You are amazing. You know, that is one of the cool things that I've kind of been following in this trend of home or natural burial, is you can order, even off of the internet. I was going to say the A word, but I decided not to at the last minute. You can order from many different places wooden caskets. You can even order kits. And even in your book, there's a person who sells bookshelves, or you can use the bookshelves, wooden bookshelves, that can then later, you take them apart and reconfigure them, and they're designed to be a casket. And then people will hold casket painting parties. They'll decorate their own casket with their friends in preparation for, you know, someday in the future. And they turn it into a ritual. So we only have about four more minutes of the show. So tell us about the different kind of rituals and things that people can do to as part of their planning process.
There's lots of things. Something really neat that's come out is the Death Cafe, and this is something that's very international. And you can find this just deathcafe.com, and anybody can have one of these. Basically, it's a group of people who come together, and they discuss death. And it's not really a grief group, or it's not really just to talk about, you know, the glorification of death. It's more people who want to kind of get some answers and talk to people who maybe have gone through something and kind of get their thoughts out there and see what other people think. And they're very organized and sort of structured. And they're either in people's homes or they're at different community centers and all that. And I've gone to a couple of those over the years. Very helpful. Very helpful. It really allows you to talk about this with a group of people who want to talk. That's a nice ritual. The idea
is that like a meetup.
Yeah, right. Exactly. A meetup. You can find these all over the place, and you can just show up and pop on in, even if you don't have, you don't even have to speak. You can just be there and be a part of it. Other things that are happening that I really enjoy is if somebody wants to be buried just in a cardboard box, that people will come with their non-toxic paint and paint it, or their non-toxic markers and mark. And little children can really get involved in that, which is a really neat thing to happen. You can take the sheet off bed, someone's favorite sheet, their favorite you know, dress they wore, whatever, and sew things together and make a shroud. There's all these really hands-on things that you can do like that. So there's, gosh, rituals. I mean, even preparing food that when the family is starting to pass away, someone's going to die, getting together and deciding what you want to do with music. I think all of this is so helpful, especially for those who are still living and still here.
I totally intend to DJ my own funeral.
You'll be spinning your discs, doing it all.
I'll just have my playlist made in advance.
Yeah, nice.
And
why not? It's your day. You're the star of the day.
That's right. And you just... when you were just talking about that, I thought, oh yes, I know exactly which dress I'll be buried in.
Well, make it known. Tell somebody.
Oh, well. We might keep that secret for a little while. I'm so thrilled to have you here today, Elizabeth, and clearly our audience is excited by this topic as well, based on the number of calls we couldn't take today. So I want to thank you all for calling in, even if you weren't able to get your call on the air. You can totally learn everything you need to know about death, green burial, the history. I mean, the details, it's a true guidebook. It's not just a guidebook in name, but an actual guidebook. The Green Burial Guidebook, everything you need to plan an affordable, environmentally friendly burial. And the bottom line is that 100% of us, 100% of everybody is going to die. And knowing what to do and planning in advance is going to make everyone's lives and your death easier. Elizabeth Fournier, thank you so much for joining us today.
Rabia, thank you for having me. And I teach workshops. Look at the greenreaper.org and get some free hands-on knowledge. Come on out to the Portland area.
And can people reach you through greenreaper.org?
You bet.
Got a contact form? Okay.
I'm at 503-637 5020.
Hey everybody, thanks so much. Be sure and tune in every second Friday at 11 a.m. for The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of the film Hippie Family Values on Saturday, March 9th at 2 p.m. at Darkside Cinema in Corvallis. Filmed over a period of 10 years at a remote communal ranch in New Mexico, Hippie Family Values is an intimate chronicle of a handful of hippie elders along with their adult children and grandkids. The director will be in attendance. Again, that's the screening of the film Hippie Family Values on Saturday, March 9th at 2 p.m. at Darkside Cinema, 215 Southwest 4th Street in Corvallis, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Building Bridges to Sustainability on Friday, March 8th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at PCC